Good evening, friends. My name is Virginia, and I am an alcoholic. Thank you for having me. It's an honor and a privilege to be of service to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the first time that Larry called me, I didn't answer. I was like, oh, Larry from San Diego. And then he called again. I said, I have to answer, you know. And so I'm prepared. Got my shawl in case I get hot, and I had my fan in case I get hot. If I get cold or if I get hot. And Michael gave a great talk. After I heard Michael, I was ready to go home. I was like, that's it. I got the message. You know, he talked about God. He talked about surrender. He talked about recovery. He talked about step work, you know. So I talked in Santa Monica last week, and the members came over and he said, can you please, please entertain us? Can you please be funny? And I was like, that's a big commitment. I mean, don't put that responsibility on my shoulders. And they said, well, it's Saturday night, you know, and but what better fun than this to be on a Saturday night for us? And he said, well, we might go out and get drunk if you don't, you know. And I was like, I don't think so. I don't have that power. I really don't have that power. Only God. And so it's an honor and a privilege to be here. Happy birthday to Matias and to Roger. Happy, happy birthday. What a great, great celebration. It's not about you. It's about Alcoholics Anonymous. Happy birthday to AA. It's a we thing. We did it together. Every birthday we celebrate, it's not to honor one human being. It's to honor that the program is working. And every time I hear happy birthday, say, happy birthday, AA. So when we share, it's an honor and privilege to share on our birthday and say, this is how I did it. This is how we did it. So happy birthday to AA. And what a beautiful job you're doing for the deaf community. I've never been in a meeting where the service was being provided. And what a great example you are as a group. So thank you so much for that gift to me. I had never seen it. And so thank you. Hellos and how welcoming you are, thank you so much. I got on my knees in the restroom and I asked God to please, please, please remove self. Please remove me so I can tell you what he wants me to tell you. And to make me a channel. And to just let me talk freely and intimately. And so you could really get to hear my story. And in that story, one of the most beautiful things that I've heard in AA is, I understand. I can connect. I hear you. So I hope we can connect. I hope we can hear. Your heart hears my heart, and your soul hears my soul. Thank you so much, Dave. Thank you for being here, and thank you for making this a lovely weekend. And I was born in Mexico. I know you can't tell because of my accent. But I was born in a large family. I have seven sisters and two brothers. And we were. I was born in a little town, in a little ranch. It has no more than 1,000 people. Very, very, very poor. Incredibly poor. We would go to the river. We lived in front of the river, and we would go with our buckets to get water from the river. And we had the chickens and the pigs, and I was the happiest little girl in the planet. I didn't know we were poor. I had no idea we were poor. I was happy. I would wake up and look at the river, and it was beautiful, and my mom would be singing, and she would be sweeping and cooking, and it was just magnificent. And then one day, my dad decided to come to this country, and my mom followed him, and the darkness came. And it was like the whole sunlight went away. And I was like, something fell upon my heart where I became suddenly scared and I wanted my mom. I was probably 2 or 3 years old. And she left us behind, and she didn't want to leave us behind, but she wanted a better future for her children. Because when I was, before me, there was another little baby. She was 6 months old, and they were so poor that my sister got really sick, and my mom took her in her arms and took her to the doctor, and she knocked on the door, and he said, "Do you have money?" And the doctor, my mom said, I have no money." And he said, "I can't see you." And my mom went away with her little baby, and she went to a friend's house and said, "Can you please loan me some money?" And he was, of course, she went back to the doctor, and the doctor opened the door, and he said, "Do you have money?" I said, "Yes, I have money." And he put his hand on my sister's forehead, and he said, went back in. He didn't even check her. He just gave her some medicine, and my mom left. And that night, my sister passed away. My mom promised to herself that she would never, ever, none of her children would die because she didn't have money. So she was willing to leave us all behind, the thing that she loved the most, in order to give us a better future. So she came over here, and I was left behind. And I was exploring the world. At that time, I lived with my grandma. My grandma was really rigid. She was incredibly rigid, very religious and Catholic. And we would pray the rosary every day. She was very strict and very clean. And my mom was really happy and really joyful and really messy. And my grandma was really strict and very... So I lived in two worlds all of a sudden, right? And then my mom came back for some reason. And I came to this country with her for a couple of years. And I was molested by my uncle, and I was here for 2 or 3 years. And by that time, I started going I discovered books, and I would go to the library, and I loved. My first addiction was books. I would walk into the library, and I would sit in a little corner, and I would just read, and I became an intellectual hog. I loved to read. It just provided me an escape to another world. It was magnificent. It was beautiful. I would be there since I ran from school to the library, and then right before they closed, I would go back home. My mom didn't know, because, I mean, there was 10 of us, so it was like, you know. So I was here, and I didn't make many friends. They made fun of me because I had the braids, and they would call me wetback, and I didn't make many friends. But I was really smart. I was an intellectual hog. So the way I felt better than you was with my intelligence. I thought, I'm smarter than you, you know. I was 12 or 13, and I went back to Mexico, and after being here for a couple of years, and I was in this, here comes the greatest part of my life. I had two friends. I was always in Catholic school in Mexico with the nuns and everything, and a couple of friends invited me over to their house, and they had a bottle of Bacardi. And I was 12, 13 years old, and they gave me the bottle of Bacardi. I drank probably half a bottle. I was this shy, scared little girl that would hide in the library. That night, oh my God. I drank. It was magnificent. It was like the doors of heaven opened up for me. I took off my clothes. I started dancing on top of the sofa. I was kissing my girlfriend's boyfriend. I was so happy. you couldn't believe. I mean, like, oh my God, where have you been all my life? I love you. I totally, absolutely fell in love with the effect of alcohol. It produced such an incredible amount of joy and freedom in my life. It was magnificent. Oh, I remember that night we got out of the house. We were walking down the street. I fell and I was laughing, rolling in the mud, and I was laughing with so much joy. And I woke up covered in vomit. I was just disgusting. You were like, oh, and I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to do that again. It was my medicine. For me, alcohol is my medicine. Because the way I feel, if I don't drink, the way I think, I was always envious of my sisters. They were prettier than me. They were smarter than I. They had more talents than I. So the minute I drank, it was like everything went away. My friends were better than I was always comparing. And so that was my medicine. And when I got this, I got this. I'm going to be on top. I'm just going to conquer the world. I am. And I said, you know what else will help if I become a psychologist? I could figure out what's wrong with me and alcohol, and that's it. And that was my plan. And I'm an intellectual hog, and I'm very popular at this time. I'm the president of the junior high in the Catholic school. I mean, the nuns love me. I could recite any textbook that you give me. I mean, I am on top of the world. And I have a group of guys that follow me around. Not the girls, because they can't drink like I can. You know? So I have my little five, Javier and Neri and Saul. And I even had a priest that was following me. Because I love to have these intellectual conversations where you change the world, and so it was magnificent. I even took the nuns on a trip. I got all my classmates. I did parties so we could raise funds, and I took probably like 40 of my fellow students on a trip to Manzanillo. And the nuns took us in two buses, and they were so happy. I didn't know, at that time I was probably 15 years old, and the obsession for that drink was already so strong. It started in my mind. It would tell me, you need to drink. And you could lock me up. And my head would get louder and louder and louder, and the obsession would get stronger, and the obsession would get stronger. And it's like, I have to drink. And I remember walking to my, and that trip, I walked over to the boys' bungalows and said, can you please give me some booze? And they said, and they looked at me horrified, like, you're a girl, go back with the girls. And I was like, you don't understand, I need a drink. And they pushed me away. And I remember going into my bungalow and hiding under the bed. The pain of not having the drink, 15 years old, was so intense. I was crawling out of my skin. I needed a drink. I don't want a drink. I need a drink. You don't understand. And I know you guys do. So that's the first memory I have of needing, the craving for alcohol. The physical craving. So after that, I went to school. I became a psychologist. That wasn't it. But alcohol was. Every time I drank, and during my university years, I was this intellectual hog at the university, and in the evenings, I would just turn into this alcoholic. I could breathe, and then I could do it again the next day, and I could run and do like Bill W. when he goes after his dreams, but at night he has to relax and drink so he can go and get it, see if that's it. So that wasn't it. So I came out of the university. 1 month before I came out, I made my parents send me to this rich girls' university. They have 10 kids. They have to provide for 10 kids. I don't care about others. It's me. So I had them send me to this rich girls' university. I had them buy me a car. I was in Mexico studying, and I remember getting so drunk that and going on trips and on binges that I would lose all the money. I would spend all the money, and I would have to call them up and say, you know what, they raised the tuition. And I have seven sisters and two more brothers. If that's not stealing, I don't know what is. You know? So I did the university. 1 month before I finished, I called my mom and said, I don't think I want to be a psychologist. They spent so much money. And my mom says, honey, my mom knew me so well, if you finish, I'll give you a trip to South America or Europe. Oh, okay, I think I'll finish. So I did, and I went to South America for 1 month. That was the best year of my life. I was drunk 24/7. It was magnificent. It was just extraordinary. So after that, I came back, and I went to Europe for a month, and I was drunk all the time. And then I came back, and I said, now what's going to fix me? I need to, what's next? Where am I going? I said, well, maybe if I get married. And then I looked around the room. I looked around the little village. I said, hey, yep, over here. I didn't love him. I didn't care about his well-being. I didn't care about his uppermost happiness. All I cared was that he was a dentist. He didn't drink. He came from a good family. He was going to take care of me because I'm a user. You know, it's all about me. I have a disease that centers in my mind, tell me that I'm the most important person in the world. So I used him, and I got married, and that wasn't it. Said, well, maybe if I have a great job. And then so I came to this country when I was 23, 24 years old. And I said, well, maybe if I have the great job, that's going to be it. So I did. I got a job in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. I was giving interviews on TV. I was managing 7 offices. I was a young, very intelligent, very brilliant, very, you know, successful woman. But that wasn't it. And then I said, well, maybe if I have children. I don't want to have children because I love children. I don't want to have children because I want to nurture and care for them and develop this human, beautiful relationship with a human being. I want to have children because I want to use them to fix me. Because I'm a selfish, self-centered human being. I only care about me. I have a disease that's vicious. And to shut down the voices that when they tell me to the conscious and the morals, I drink. Because I don't want to hear it. Because now the voices get louder. It's not fun anymore. So I have my daughter. She made me happy for 1 week. 1 week. And then I said, well, maybe if I have a beautiful mansion, that will fix me. So I went back to Mexico, and I had my husband build me a beautiful mansion. Beautiful house, 2-story. And I have the maid. And I remember drinking in that house, and I have the 2 kids, and I have the mansion, and I have the husband, and I have the career, and I have the trips, and I have everything. And I remember this woman that lived across from me, and she had nothing. Nothing. She would wake up every morning, and she would sing, and she would go to church, and she would sweep the street, and she would get money for doing jobs around the town. She was the happiest woman alive. And all she had was her religion. I said, oh, poor thing. Poor, poor thing. I had everything, and I was the unhappiest woman in the world. All I had was my alcohol because that was my companion. That fixed me. It always fixed me. So at the end of my drinking, I come back here. Nothing is working. I'm done. I'm out of answers. I have a one bedroom studio. My two kids, my husband, he goes to work, and I said, today I'm going to shower. Today I'm going to I'm going to take care of my kids. I'm going to cook for them. I'm going to be a good wife. At 6 o'clock in the afternoon, my husband comes home, and I haven't showered, and I haven't cooked, and I haven't taken care of my kids. I can't. I can't do life anymore, and I'm out of answers. But alcohol still works. It provides that window. When I drink, I'm like, I can do life again. So the last time I drank probably a bottle of tequila. I don't know how many beers. My body's totally, totally drunk. But my mind is totally awake. And I could feel the feelings, and I could feel the fear, and I could feel the anger, and I could feel the jealousy, and I could feel the envy, and I could feel everything. And I could, it's not working, and the alcohol is not relaxing me. It's not working. So I'm not here because I want to be good or I want to get better. I'm here because alcohol stopped working. If alcohol was still working, I would be out there. The thing is, when I drink, it doesn't shut my mind. And my disease centers in my mind. I have a diabolical, somebody says it's just a mean, vicious, I think it was Roger, mind. Tells me to hate that person, fear this thing, envy that. You don't have enough. You're not enough. It's always comparing me to everything and everyone. It's never, ever enough. My drinking is just a symptom of a deeper spiritual condition. I am insatiable. My instincts within me run wild. When I get drunk, I have sex with everybody. When I get drunk, I can envy everybody. I can hate everything. They said instincts running wild. It's like horses, wild horses within me. And that's who I am. I'm a wild savage. So when I come to you, I came to you that I woke up naked in the hall of my little studio by then. My husband didn't care to cover me. I had my 1-year-old and my 3-year-old and and I wake up and look at the ceiling. I said, my lover is gone. My medicine is gone. What am I going to do? Whew. I'm 30 years old. So I knock and I call Alcoholics Anonymous, and I come to you. I come to you. Yes, I was 30. And I come to you, and I'm a savage. I'm a savage, and I'm afraid, and I'm just like from this intellectual, beautiful human being that I thought I was. I come in, and I'm scared, and I don't know how to do life, and everything hurts, and I walk into the room, and the way you look at me is painful. The way I feel life and everything is painful. As an alcoholic, you look at me and it hurts. I feel everything. I'm just like, and I would walk into the rooms of AA and I would hide in the corner. And I love the newcomers that hide, you know. I love them because I get you. I understand. We come from hell. And I'm not here. They say that alcoholics are here because religion is for people who don't want to go to hell, and spirituality is people who come from hell. I come from hell. Don't tell me about hell. I know where hell is. So that's why I love this story about there's a priest, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, and a doctor, and there's an alcoholic. And the alcoholic is in the deep, deep, deep hole. And there's the psychiatrist throws him some medicine. the psychologist gives him some therapy, and he can't just, and the priest prays for him, nothing, and the doctor gives him some, nothing. And another alcoholic comes by, and he jumps right into the hole. He said, and the other alcoholic says, "What, are you stupid? Now both of us are stuck here." He says, "No, I know how to get out." That's why we dive into each other's souls and hearts, because we know how to get out. If we're here, it's because we know how to get out. And our whole purpose is to get others out of that hell. Our primary purpose is to help others get out of hell. We have no other purpose, no other greater purpose. Mother Teresa used to say, she went in the convention, and the speaker at the convention in Canada, she had met Mother Teresa, and she said, Mother Teresa told her that she had, all her life, she had wanted to help alcoholics, but that privilege and that honor had only been given to us. The miracle of saving another life has only been given to us. So you saved my life. I came to you 22 years ago. Well, almost 22. September 19th, 1994, I came to you. And I walked into the rooms a savage. I couldn't shower. I couldn't cook breakfast. I couldn't take care of my kids. I couldn't take them to school. I couldn't go to work. And then you said some magnificent words. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Yeah, buddy. And you opened the door. Because you said, as you understand God. I thought there was, Catholics had the concession on God. It was like the Chevrolet or the Cadillac. And when you give me that permission, because I'm intellectual hawk, I think that you guys created God, the concept of God was created by religion to manipulate the masses and to control the ignorant. And I'm not ignorant. And I'm not, so I had all these theories in my head, but you dissolved them with those words. When you say, as you understand God, you gave me the opportunity to explore. And I said, well, I'm a child of Antonio Marquez. And if I seek his DNA within me, I'll find him, right? You'll find my father's DNA within me, right? So if I'm truly a child of God, if what you say is truth, and if I seek it, I will find him. So it's in the seeking. If I seek, I will find. So I started my journey, and I'll turn my life and my will over to your care for half an hour. And if you do a good job, I'll give you more time. And I started calling him everlasting flow of energy, universal intelligence, whatever. And I would stand in front of the ocean, I would like, talk to me. Come to me. For hours and hours and hours. And I started seeking. And I started asking, and I started seeking, and I started asking. And for the last... And the answer, my God, my journey with my program with God has been this one. When I came to you, I hated blacks, I hated gays, I hated Hispanics, I hated whites, I hated Asians, I hated anything and everyone. Dogs, cats, everything. Children, I hated children. I hated the Spaniards for conquering Mexico 500 years ago. I hated everything, and I was afraid of everything. Everything. So, my God is an amazing, beautiful God. says, "Honey, you need so many lessons in love. Oh, baby." And his first lesson was, I hated children. So he put me to work in a school. And I've been teaching for the last 20 years. They're 6-year-olds, 5- and 6-year-olds. And every morning we check in and we make a circle. He said, "How are we feeling today? From 1 to 10, how are we feeling?" And they check in and they tell me, "From 1 to 10, I feel like an 8. Or whatever. And every morning I get "I love yous." And every morning I get "I love yous." And every day I get to tell them, "I love you." And I learned to love children. One of my sponsors is black. I love her. I used to hate gays, and my son came out when he was 14. Every single thing that I hated, God has put in my path to learn to love. I hated Spaniards, hated them. And the first year that I was teaching, like 20 Spaniards came into my school. My best friend is a Spaniard today. I used to hate one of the biggest pains that I have caused my daughter. She tends to be chubby, and I criticized her so much in sobriety. She was even afraid. I would come into the house and say, "Why are all the windows open, Paul? Why?" She said, "Because I heated a pizza pocket and I didn't want you to smell it." So my journey, yesterday we talked for about an hour on the phone. She lives in Washington. I don't see my daughter's body anymore. I see her soul, her heart, her brilliance, and she's perfect the way she is. Absolutely perfect. My soulmate, we've been in each other's life for the last 6 years. And we were 50 pounds heavier. And I never saw his body. Everything that I've learned, I hated, I have learned to love. Everything. And our journey is from courage, from fear to courage, my journey. From hatred to love. And every opportunity I have is that. Where am I today? Einstein said, that we can treat life as if everything is a miracle or nothing is a miracle. And he was brilliant. I think he was brilliant. Every time I shower, it's a miracle. Every time I get up to go to work, it's a miracle. Every time I get to drive, it's a miracle. So, in sobriety, I have done so many mistakes. My journey has been, I was obsessed with men. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we have is a daily reprieve contingent of the maintenance of our spiritual condition, right? So I have worked many things throughout my sobriety. In the last 22 years, for the first 15 years, I was obsessed with finding the right guy. Finding the right guy. I was obsessed with lust. I was obsessed with men. And I don't know what your obsessions might be. We're not cured. But if we pray, if we ask, 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 it says in the big book, it says over and over, "Ask me, my child, ask me. Ask me, please ask me in the morning to divorce you from self-pity. Ask you to divorce you from self-pity." Each morning I ask my God to divorce me from self-pity, selfish and self-seeking motives. Ask me to relieve you of your shortcomings. Ask me to relieve you of your bondage to self. Ask me to relieve you of everything. Ask me, my child. Seek me. I'm closer to you than your own breath. Ask me. Just ask me humbly. Ask me. Rely on me and on me completely. I don't know when and I don't know how, but you turn around and that defect will go away. But we have to keep on asking. So my battle was with lust. It has been removed by the grace of God. My battle has been with hatred. It has been removed. Right now I'm working on an inventory and it's not how much time we have. I can say I have 21 years. It's not how much time I have. It's how much program I'm digesting. How much program am I digesting? It doesn't matter how many years you have. If I'm not active in on the steps, I'm not doing anything. I can show up and check in and come to meetings, but I'm not growing. So I need to be active on my steps. So right now I'm on a fourth again, and I'm writing my inventory, and I'm writing about my fears. And I'll be quiet with this. Where I'm at right now is this. I'm doing my inventory, and you always get to see new things. Right now I'm seeing that when I write about, I'm resentful at whomever. Because this, but I had never done the spiritual treatment. Because it tells you to do, write your resentment, ask you why you have it, go over what it affects, and then do the spiritual treatment of Glenn is a sick person, just like me. I had never done with each resentment to go back and say, this is a spiritual person just like me. God help me, save me from being angry. So every time, now I have to go back through all my resentments and do the spiritual treatment for each one that I resent. So we could be on an equal plane. And then I could move on to my part. So it was like, wow, I'm 21 years old. And I had never seen that part. So we're always learning. And the other part that I'm learning is in the fear inventory where it says, we write our fears, ask you, how did you set the ball rolling? And then ask, why do you have that fear? And then do the spiritual treatment. Ask God to remove that fear. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. I had never done that applying the four steps to the fears. So we're never done learning. I hope I'm never done learning. And I always keep on growing and growing and growing. I can't thank you enough for allowing me to come and share. And I hope we got intimate enough that I was able to show you my heart. And in showing you my heart, you could say, I understand. And once again, the miracle that Alcoholics Anonymous is, that where God is here, and that magnificent gift of one alcoholic talking to another, we get to heal together by the grace of God. And only by the grace of God. So thank you so much for allowing me to share.